Radio MD.
RadioMD.com.
Hear it from the doctor with expert guests from the American Academy of Pediatrics. It's Healthy Children. Now, our favorite mom, Melanie Cole, MS.
If you're raising a child on the spectrum, you know that they sometimes can struggle with learning, controlling impulses, communication, sometimes overload. But what is a parent to do when we see all of these forms of social media and all of the technology that's going on? And is that something that's going to help our children or overload them? Is it too overwhelming? My guest today is Dr. Jenny Radesky. She's an assistant professor of developmental behavioral pediatrics at the University of Michigan Medical School. Welcome to the show, Dr. Radesky. So when parents come to you and they've got a child that's somewhere on the spectrum, what do you tell them about the use of media, starting from when they're little and they get diagnosed? Because there's even little games and little, you know, interactive things for little guys, and then moving into their teen years.
Yep. Well, it's interesting how easy it has been to talk about media in the exam room, because most families now come in with their child having a smartphone or a mobile device to kind of keep them occupied while we're going through our very lengthy visits in developmental behavioral pediatrics. So I often take the opportunity just to ask the child or the parent, you know, what do you like to play? What's your favorite thing to do? You know, trying to ask parents if they know what their child is downloading or installing, and how often they play together, and what they think their child might be learning. And I think this is a good opportunity to, number one, let parents know there's no judgment. There's nothing to be, you know, to feel bad about with their child using media. I more just want to have an open conversation about how they're using it, not just the number of hours that per day, or, you know, the times a day that they're using it. And so I like to talk about what apps the child is using, because a lot of parents come in believing the marketing claims that apps have been making in the app stores that says this is educational for, you know, ages 0 to 5, when actually there's no evidence that a lot of young kids can learn well from apps. And if they do learn, it's really, really basic rote learning, like learning ABCs, learning 1, 2, 3s, learning colors. The thing about kids on the autism spectrum, and a lot of kids I see that aren't on the autism spectrum but are struggling with aspects of their development, is that they may not need help with all those really rote skills. They need help with calming down when they're upset. They need help with learning to check in with other people in the room to see if it's an okay time to do something before they react to an impulse. You know, they need the skills of learning the back and forth, reciprocal interactions that make play fun. And so that's one of the first lessons I try to talk about, you know, with all families, is say, okay, these devices, they're fun. They keep our kids so quiet. You know, they're really fun to Skype with grandma and everything else. But the most important thing is know what these devices can teach, like maybe some of these little, you know, letter number skills, and what they can't teach, which is all the social and emotional skills that kids on the spectrum struggle with.
So then when you look at what the kids are doing, because not only are there apps and games, a lot of games and things that really can keep them occupied for a long time, but then there's social media. Mm-hmm. And that's, I mean, that's, mm-hmm. that's a situation and an issue for parents whose kids are not on the spectrum, is the amount of time and focus it takes away from learning and school and bullying and everything. So what about when the kids have an autism spectrum disorder and their social media and their friends are on social media, or their, what do you tell them about that? Let's start there and then kind of work into some of the apps you do like.
Okay. Well, I think when it comes to when kids go through this transition from an early childhood that's mostly playing games on phones and devices, and then eventually as they get into elementary and middle school, they start communicating more with their peers through devices. At both of these stages, it's really important for parents to feel empowered that they help their kids learn about persuasive design. And when I say persuasive design, I mean all the little bells and whistles and rewards and snap streaks and notifications and all of the things that are built in to interactive technology that keep us hooked on them, that keep us, you know, really engaged, that make us want to play longer, get to the next level, share with one more person, right? So I was just at this conference last week with Common Sense Media and a group called the Center for Humane Technology. These are a bunch of designers who've all worked in Silicon Valley and are really upset about the way that persuasive design is taking advantage of the of all of our little behavioral reinforcement reactions and keeping us more engaged with technology than kids need to be at this age, and especially kids on the spectrum who need a little more time and a little more help learning to have the social interactions that don't come as comfortable to them, learning to maybe play a sport that doesn't come as easy to them because they have more motor coordination problems. You know, maybe communicating face-to-face is hard, so they're more likely to want to communicate versus via social media or via a game like Roblox where they're kind of chatting with each other during play. So it's very alluring. And one step, like I said, is parents should feel empowered to say, okay, kids, I'm going to help you learn the tricks that technology is using to keep us all so engaged, and so that we can empower kids, too, to say, hey, I know that they're luring me with those extra coins just to play a little bit more time, and I'm going to be smarter than that, and I'm going to go unplug and, you know, go play outside with my dog or something, you know, that kids can decide when and where they're going to put their attention. Now, social media, I've had a couple of patients with autism who've gotten into some difficult interactions over social media.
I would think so.
They may say something that crosses a line, and they mm-hmm. don't know it at the time. They may, you know, post something that's inappropriate, but they don't understand people's reactions to them. And, you know, I've even had one patient who got into kind of a legal issue where the cops were called, and it was so stressful to the family because the child hadn't intentionally done it. So that's why, from an early age, our new American Academy of Pediatrics guidelines really recommend media use being a shared activity between parents and kids. So parents, sorry to give them another job, but being able to be a mentor to their kids while they're using media means that when a child, either on the spectrum or off, goes to use social media for the first time, they expect their parent is going to be part of that media experience.
Very good idea.
Tips, that they're going to be giving them ideas of, oh, maybe you shouldn't phrase it that way. That might hurt your friend's feelings. Because, you know, parents ourselves, we've been through this before of having little uncomfortable moments on Facebook or other kind of media-based exchanges that haven't gone so well. And so we need to use what we've learned and give our kids some nudges and some tips of ways to use this the right way. And then if they do have something that goes wrong, if they see something that makes them uncomfortable, they'll be much more likely to come to us and talk about it than if social media or media in general is just a solitary experience in your family where you're closed in. You know how it feels to interact with your device. It's yours. It knows you. Siri knows what you've searched for before. You know, it's like your own little personal relationship with your device. And sometimes we need to remind kids, no, like, come out of your cocoon with your device and come talk to me about what you saw, because I didn't see it with you, because, you know, you were in your room looking at it yourself. So that's really a movement the AAP would like parents to move in that direction, is as media becomes way more individualized, we as humans need to push back against that a little bit and try to make it more shared, more social, more something we talk about and we push back against if we feel like it's not the interaction we want our kids to have.
This time of year, it's hard to avoid getting sick, whether it's a common cold or the stomach bug. It's crucial to stay well hydrated. Hydrolyte is a great-tasting clinical hydration product that contains the correct balance of sodium, glucose, and water to rapidly replace fluids and electrolytes. Hydrolyte comes in great flavors like orange, berry, lemonade, and is available as a pre-mixed drink, a powder, or effervescent tablets that you can simply drop into a glass or a bottle of water. Compared to sports drinks, Hydrolyte delivers up to 4 times the electrolytes with 75% less sugar. Hydrolyte solutions are appropriate for all ages, and each bottle or package includes easy-to-follow dosing instructions. You can find Hydrolyte in the digestive aisle at Rite Aid or online at Amazon.com. Visit Hydralyte.com/podcasts to save 30% on Amazon with promo code HydraKid. That's Hydralyte.com/podcasts to save 30% on Amazon with promo code HydraKid. Well, certainly that is absolutely great advice. And when we see kids that focus so very well on these things and these apps and these games, and maybe they don't focus, even children that are not on the spectrum can, you know, focus on these things and then they fidget around or get bored at school or at the dinner table or anything else. But for some reason, these things are magnetic that way. They kids just stare into them. So what do you like, doctor, that you want to recommend that parents look at the brain training games or, you know, some of the things that might be a little bit more rewarding or educational?
So I think that most of the content or almost all the content coming out of PBS Kids and Sesame Workshop, And I haven't been paid to say this. I've played a lot of their games. I've looked at the research that they've done to show that their games are actually educational. And I think that parents can usually trust those two makers, those two digital creators for kids. They have developmental psychologists on their staff. They know how kids learn. They know not to put in too much of the distracting, you know, tap this, do this, because research shows that the more of those bells and whistles and taps and swipes that you have to do, the less kids remember of what they read or encountered during an educational media experience. So, you know, those two makers are both very, you know, trustworthy. I would also recommend a few that I always recommend to families is like Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood has been studied both with kids on the spectrum and off. And when parents and kids watch Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood together and learn some of those social-emotional lessons, kids show better skills over time. Because Daniel Tiger is awesome because it has all these little songs and sayings that we can use with our kids to help them calm down or help them remember how to share or handle frustration. So that's one. Number two is that you don't have to keep yourself to just these two, you know, makers. Go to Common Sense Media and look up, you can look up the best apps, the best shows for each age range. And they've even created little guides like how to build character skills, how to build things like persistence or creativity. And they've reviewed some apps or other products that they think are better and don't have all those distracting, persuasive design features. They're more just fun and let the child take more of the lead. Rather than having a game where it's the app telling the kid's brain, do this, do this, do this, do this, you know, and that's what you were saying before about when you have an app that's, or a game that's just dragging your attention along through level after level and games and coins and explosions and everything else, the child's brain doesn't have to do the work. But when the child is given an app like the ones I play with my kids are like Toka Kitchen. Like, there are no rules to it. You just kind of make silly food and feed it to animals, and it's much more unstructured. You get to take it at your own pace. You get to take turns more. It's much easier to use between a parent and child than one of these games that's like go, 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 where you're just kind of collecting stuff. I also really like using media not just for games and shows, but using it as a tool. You know, we downloaded a video maker app where we took a video of my kids and then we sped it up and added silly songs or added silly stickers. You know, really, it wasn't a beautiful end product. You know, it was a silly video, but it showed my kids that I use my phone not just for staring at my work email, but that I use it for, you know, doing something creative where, you know, I get to try to make something new. We use it every week to Skype with grandparents because I want them to know that technology is for more than just consumption, but it's for connection with people that we love and that we maintain relationships that way. And I really, you know, the other thing I like about the Common Sense Media reviews is that they tell you, here's the best movies for a movie night, where you can, you know, every Friday sit down with your kids and, you know, watch this movie that's going to stimulate more conversation, more good ideas to help you teach your kids rather than, you know, each one of us on our own devices in our separate rooms, which, you know, tends to be more isolating. Now, we all need downtime from each other at times, and especially when you're raising a kid on the spectrum, it's stressful. You need times when you need peace and quiet, and I totally understand that. But it's just making sure that is, you know, only a little bit of time, and it's way balanced with more connected time and more time where you're using media as a tool, like with you know, kids who are using iPads as communication devices, or they're using their iPads to create social stories where they get to handle new challenges together. That's where media can be used as a very cool tool that is very motivating to kids. I often use, you know, visual schedules. You get a visual schedule app and you kind of plug in the pictures that you need to do for brushing your teeth or for any other non-preferred activity. And, you know, you have a higher likelihood of the child being motivated to do those steps because it's on an iPad, which, you know, they love these shiny objects that are fun.
They do.
Those are the tips I tend to recommend, is really to help parents reframe, you know, this isn't just for streaming YouTube, because that's what I see with a lot of my patients, you know, with autism, is that they... Here's the thing. It's like when you have autism, you often love certain types of experiences, types of topics, types of videos. Kids get very restricted interest because that's what makes the world feel predictable for them. Kids who are on the spectrum have such a hard time comprehending and putting together all the stimuli that's coming at them. So media for them creates this like safe, predictable space where they get to watch that same episode over and over. And I don't want to take that away from them at all, but I want it to be something that we gently challenge them to change it up a little bit, or they don't just, you know, YouTube is an endless supply of videos about trucks or videos about airplanes or whatever their restricted interest might be. And just being aware that that might be a place where kids can really dive into a rabbit hole, and we need to balance it with the other kind of creative or use of media as a tool rather than just this, you know, source of restricted interest.
Well, and that's such a good point, and leads us to my next point, and we don't have a lot of time left, Doctor, but what are red flags with the use of media and social media? And, I mean, you know, kids even play these multiplayer games, you know. I know that I had to cut my son off when he was 9. I wouldn't get him the headset, and he wanted to talk to the other people, and I was like, oh, my God, that's just so scary to me, because you don't know who's on the other end. But what red flags do you want parents to know in the time we have left of things when these games and things become a little too overstimulated and a little too overwhelming? I mean, for a child not on the spectrum, it's easy enough for a parent to just say, see ya, unplug it, no more. Mm-hmm. You know, you're done, or it made you upset, so forget about it. But with a child on the spectrum, that could start its own whole host of issues. What do you do, and what are those red flags?
The main red flags would be, number one, it's interfering with some of the main healthy behaviors that the child needs. So sleep, you know, getting outside to play or have some physical activity time, you know, within the child's abilities, and having some time where they are doing the best they can in terms of social interactions. I know it's hard, but if they're in kind of a safe place with therapists or peers or classmates, those are the experiences that we really need for optimal brain development and skill development in kids with autism. The second would be, just like you said, for parents, my message is, if you don't like the way your child is acting right after they play something, then take that game out of the rotation. I know it's harder when you have a child who gets way more stuck on their favorite things. And that's one of the tough things when you're raising a child on the spectrum, is your kid gets so much more stuck. Transitions are harder. So that's a time when you might have to work with your ABA therapist or other therapist to work on other replacement behaviors that might suit the same purpose as media for them. That you might have to take maybe they're obsessed with their Thomas the Train videos. Maybe you join them and watch a few of those videos together and then gently nudge them towards, okay, well, let's go play with our real trains. Let's go do something in 3D in real life rather than watching it on the screen together. Maybe you harness their strong interest in Thomas the Train to learn colors or learn how to read their facial expressions. So there are ways to not have to do a full stop and say, you know, no, child, I'm cutting you off. You can't do this anymore. A lot of times with kids on the spectrum, we have to join them in their strong interest and then gently challenge them or shape their interests a little bit more so they can be a little bit more flexible. So I definitely recommend, you know, talking to therapists and providers about what sort of goals a child should have in terms of the balance of media and non-media activities during the day. I recommend more of the shared use so that media can be a little bit more of a social activity. But, you know, I know it's hard when a child's eyes are glued to the screen. It's much harder to get eye contact, and it's harder to get social reciprocity and the back and forth. And then I also, you know, I recommend parents, you know, when you are raising a child on the spectrum, you often go through periods where you just don't feel as empowered because the systems of care that you're trying to navigate are very disjointed and they're hard to navigate. Or you may not be happy with the educational system, or you may not be, you know, feeling like your parenting is working. And so, you know, in any way you can to try to make media one of the places where you feel like, well, we're doing this together. I'm using it in a really constructive way, may help improve parents' confidence instead of feeling like, oh, this is another thing I can't control. Because it's definitely something parents can control and can, you know, just tweak in little ways to make it more of a positive for the child. Like I said, like I often recommend to families, okay, I want you to replace, you know, a half hour of his YouTube videos with a half hour of Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood. See if you can just make that minor change, and then you get to start working with them about calming down or, you know, the other social-emotional skills that Daniel Tiger teaches. So it's all about those little changes that make you feel like, okay, we can handle this.
Great advice. Really, such important information. Boy, it's ever-changing, Doctor, isn't it? And this is definitely
yes,
something, I mean, it's something that every parent is going through, whether or not your child has one of the spectrum disorders or ADHD or any of these things, or is a child that doesn't, but just maybe lacks a little focus, but sits there on these devices and walks into your office with their phones in their hand, taking pictures of themselves on Snapchat. Makes me absolutely crazy, but this is really good advice and so important for parents to hear. And parents, I'd like you to share this show with your friends so that they can hear this great advice. And you know, our expert guests are always provided by the American Academy of Pediatrics in conjunction with their consumer website, healthychildren.org, right here on Radio MD. And we're giving you the best, most quality information. That's what we do. You can listen to us on iHeart or iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, but of course we want you to listen on RadioMD.com. This is Melanie Cole. Thanks for listening to Healthy Children, and stay well.